This is KGNU Media Gardens, Nuestras Ondas, La Encrucijada. Where Boulder County youth tell their stories, give their perspectives, and become a seed to amplify youth voices from our community. Today's segment is brought to you in partnership with the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission.
My name is Andrea Montiel-Lastiri. I've been an active member of the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission for 3 years and 2 years as a co-chair. I'm also a high school student.
Hi, my name is Isaiah Williams, and I've been on LEAC for 2 years, and I am also a high school student. The Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission, or LEAC, is the City of Lafayette's youth board. We are made up of 25 middle and high school students and supported by a small team of adult advisors. Among other responsibilities, we are tasked with
advising the City Council on relevant issues like mental health and substance abuse prevention,
addressing issues affecting our peers through year-long or multi-year projects,
coordinating the city's annual Martin Luther King Jr. and Cesar Chavez events,
and promoting youth voice and community engagement. Today we are joined by two alumni of the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission, Lafayette City Council Member J.D. Manget and Lafayette City Council Member Inis Medrano. So tell us about your involvement in LEAC. How did the experience influence you to continue serving your community and continue public service work?
Really, without LEAC, I would not have been introduced to public service and the social justice work that I really love to do now. I'm only 20 years old, and so I think it's important that we keep giving this platform commissions like LEAC to middle school and high school students, because it's what we should be doing. We should be raising them up and hiring the standards of what it means to be involved in your community and serve our community well.
Yeah, thank you, Isaiah. I really appreciate that question. The Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission fundamentally changed my life. Prior to getting involved in local government and even just my community in general, I had a little bit of a bad habit of getting into trouble. And there were a lot of different paths that I could have ended up on. But I truly believe that it was my involvement in youth leadership committees like this one where I was able to kind of have a new perspective on life and what I could accomplish. It was a very empowering committee to be a part of. And I truly believe that the reason why I'm in the position I am today is because of organizations like the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission.
For today's interview, we'd like to focus on the issues of mental health and police-teen relations, both of which LEAC has prioritized. We'd like to get your perspective on these issues and on what the community can do to help address them. Our first question for you is, do you think the community has enough resources for mental health, especially for our youth population?
I appreciate you bringing this up, Andrea. Of course, I'm an elected official, but I'm first and foremost a teacher. I have the pleasure of serving as an 8th grade social studies teacher at Angevine Middle School, where I get a firsthand experience and I get to see, you know, directly in front of me each and every day some of the struggles that a lot of our local youth are going through. And our school, although they do a phenomenal job, and our city does as well, to providing support for these young people, at the end of the day, you know, they just don't have the capacity to really handle each and every one's problems individually. And I really think it ultimately comes down to a cultural, societal issue as well. You know, I'm so happy that we're having conversations like this today because this is not normal, right? Well, it's becoming normal, which is the great thing about it. It used to be something where we didn't even acknowledge it. And so I think that the city, based off of our most recent election results, the passage of ballot initiatives 2B and 2C, where we get to see, wow, our community is aligned and unified in prioritizing mental health in this community.
I think one of the issues as well is the impact of not having resources for mental health disproportionately affects young people and young people of color. And I think it's also looking at how mental health is viewed, because in a lot of these communities, it's weird to talk about mental health, or it may seem like it's not real, or there's a lot of different perceptions when it comes to mental health.
So like Anise was talking about those stereotypes that are in a community about mental health, LEAC did a project to help kind of destigmatize that. We worked with Bobby, the owner of Eaton Suites, to paint a mural on his business We painted a lotus flower, the lotus symbolizing thriving in the dirtiest of conditions. We will provide a QR code on that mural that will be available for people to scan in case they need any resources or just anyone to talk to. And yeah, I think it was a great project we did to help just catch everyone's attention and really like think about how they're supporting people that have mental health issues maybe, or how they can help themselves.
Going off of that, me personally, like I didn't really understand what I was feeling when I was in a depression. So I feel like if we understand and have different resources around our community, it will really benefit and help specifically youth mental health. That kind of goes into our next question. If there aren't enough resources, what will be done to implement more?
So these most recent ballot initiatives, one of them directed towards mental health, for example, this money will be used to enter into contractual agreements with nonprofits in the area. So whether that be with Sister Carmen or the Empowerment Center, Mental Health Partners, wherever, we are going to ensure that our residents see where their money is going firsthand and how it's directly impacting the community. And with the second one, with the public safety tax, that one is going to be used to expand our co-responder program in partnership with the county. And also going hand in hand with that, we will be hiring more police officers with that. Now, I do believe to have a strong co-responder program, you need both excellent substance abuse preventionists, excellent counselors and folks in those industries, as well as a strong and empathetic, inclusive, understanding, not racist police department. If I didn't have as much faith as I do in our police department, I understand all the work they do. And believe me, they are truly being held accountable for their actions. I know that they are actively working to be better at their jobs. And at the same time, we don't really have a history or a track record of any violence or unnecessary actions directed towards our communities of color here. Luckily, now that's not to say it will never happen. However, I do believe our police department has done a great job so far. And I'm hoping with the benefit of the sales tax increase, they're able to kind of continue to do good work in our community.
Are those specific resources accessible for everyone in our community?
They better be. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is like, so with the right people elected and the right city staff in place, which I do believe we have, we can pick and choose what we want to use this money to do, right? Who we want to work with. And a lot of that actually involves collaboration with multiple entities, including you all, the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission. I really do believe that having your voice involved in these conversations, as well as connections, in the nonprofit world, in the schools, I do believe that this should be a collaborative effort to determine where money is going and how it's used.
Another question we have for you is, how can we help the community be better educated and informed about mental health?
There's a lot of different ways that we could do this, and I think working with the organizations that are present here in Lafayette is a great start with the nonprofits that are here. And I mean, I think LEAC does a really good job, as you guys were talking about the mural. Like, that's huge. A lot of people walk by Old Town Lafayette and are going to see this mural and can easily scan the QR code. And I think through different presentations about mental health, we can make it more accessible for people to learn about, because that is something that is like a really big part of the issue, is a lot of people are not educated and informed about mental health. And so having organizations that serve underrepresented communities and young students and young people in our town, and having people like you, Andrea, and Isaiah, who are passionate about this and share about this with your friends and are willing to give up your time to work on this, I think is the way that we can best educate and inform our community about this issue.
How can we ensure that our youth know who or where to go to when they are confronting mental health issues?
When I think about this is school, because, you know, when you're in middle school and high school, that's where you spend so much of your time. And I think that should be the number one place where kids should feel comfortable in accessing these resources, because it's where you spend so much time and that should be a safe space. And maybe it's not for a lot of kids. And so creating those safe spaces to talk about mental health issues within our schools. And I also think events like panels that LEAC holds for parents to learn more from young people on how to have these conversations about mental health, I think is really crucial.
How can we facilitate stronger relationships between the police and teens?
this is a tricky situation, right? Because people are upset with each other, right? People are mad. Young people have witnessed videos and seen things on the news and on TV where they have seen individuals their age, especially people of color, being killed and murdered in the streets by police officers, right? Those are images that you can't just erase and take lightly. So a lot of students are passionate about this topic. They want to fill the streets. They want to march. They want to fill the streets. They want legislation to be passed. They want reform to be passed. They want reform. They want things to be different to ensure that those don't happen again. And so that's the hardest part. Is like, how do you move forward from that? So I think what it comes down to, first and foremost, I think based off of recent events, it is on the police department to better understand the youth first and to take the initiative. Understanding what the youth's needs are, having conversations with them, learning about their experiences, what is not working from a youth perspective, I think is the first step. Afterwards, I think it also is important for them to meet on that two-way street and have the youth understand what are police like outside of the uniform, you know, and what are they like with the uniform on? What are their values? Why do they believe the things that they do? What values do they have? What is their life like? I think it's important for every young person to go on a ride along with a police officer and understand what is a day in their lives look like. And then, you know, ultimately what it comes down to is, to me, it's all about restorative justice. When it comes down to it, like a lot of young people, their interactions with a police department are typically negative, right? It's punitive. It's, we're arresting you for something. We are ticketing you for something. And so, you know, you just off the bat, you don't like that, right? And so I think that if we can focus on reforming our justice system where not every single interaction young people have with our police department is negative, maybe that is a great second step into evolving that relationship.
How we're approaching this issue from the LAAC perspective, what we were thinking about doing is going to the Lafayette Police Department and maybe doing a little presentation on what it's like being a person of color, especially youth person of color here in Lafayette. A lot of these issues happen because people are not educated on them. So I believe that if we get to that point where we can educate them, maybe they'll have a better understanding from our perspective. And I think we can also learn something from all of this too, because we each help each other and understand what our struggles are. And I think, like you also said, JD, doing those ride-alongs also are going to help us too. It's a really great way of approaching it because we're both listening to each other. I don't know if Isaiah wants to pitch in and talk a little bit about it too.
I agree. Me personally, I don't have the best relationship with police officers, but I'm definitely open to creating a better one and advocating for others so we can start going to a good direction. I really just think that perspective and putting yourselves in others' shoes can really help the relationship between police and teens, just because I know, like, my perspective, it's getting better as time goes and working with the police, but is not having that trust, which we all should have that trust, just because I know, like, seeing things on social media traumatized me, and I know many others. And I think it's just important to understand where people are coming from, because if the police understood how a teen, a student of color in their community, how they feel, maybe just walking in their street, I think it would make them just reflect and help them understand how they can maybe go on and serving in our community.
Those are all amazing ideas. And I think especially if you take a look at, like, the course of history over time, all significant change has been made through individuals with passion, a plan, and a community to rally with. And you all have a lot of that here in Lafayette, which is great. And you're in a leadership position where students around the community actually look up to you. You know, if you're able to use your knowledge and your drive, right, your drive to want to make a change in the community, you have all the resources available to do that. So I would fully encourage you all to move forward with conversations like that with our chief and with the rest of our police department.
What's your perspective on the community's relationship with the police, and what should it look like?
This topic is something that really interests me. I'm a third year at CU Boulder studying sociology in hopes of becoming a police officer one day. It's one of my big goals after city council. And as a student of color and, you know, a daughter of immigrants, this topic really hits home, and it's my dream to make a change.
The
police's main job is to protect and serve our community. And when the relationship isn't there, then their job cannot be done well. Ideally, what I would love for that to look like is for our police to always try and learn more about our community and the different groups and types of people that we have in our community, because that's the only way that we can serve people is getting to know them. That's what I would love to do, is to serve my community well by getting to know who I'm serving and creating that trust as best as possible.
One of the things that I really admire about our police department is their shared understanding sessions, where they've held over the last year, they held about 3 sessions across the community. And it was the heads of the police departments as well, our chiefs and our commanders, who sat down at local parks and local community centers and had conversations with people directly. And you had people of all ages and backgrounds in the crowd asking direct questions and the police answering them. And so I think that relationship is starting to grow and mend a little bit more, because you have a proactive police department looking to solve some of these issues. And you have an engaged, passionate community wanting to get involved as well. If either side becomes, I think the relationship is starting to grow and mend a little bit more, because you have a proactive police department looking to solve some of these issues. And you have an engaged, passionate community wanting to get involved as well. If either side becomes apathetic, then no change is made.
I feel like, me personally, I can't speak for everyone, but I feel safer without a police officer with maybe like a gun and stuff like that in schools. But yeah, and having someone that's has more of a role in understanding kids, talking to kids, person you can like talk to and who can keep the school safe, but also, I don't know, socialize with the students and make you feel comfortable in schools.
Can you tell me, and I guess the audience, a little bit more about this new role? Are they different from the SRO, or what is their purpose? What are they dressed like? You know, yeah. What are they like?
Yeah, so basically, instead of an SRO, they're unarmed and they play more of kind of like a counselor role, but also they're to protect us as well, but they're not in their uniforms. And they like focus a lot on restorative justice too, more of that, not necessarily like giving them tickets and stuff like that. They're also there just kind of like a counselor. They've been hired and they're getting trained all throughout. And that's good. It's like a lot of implicit bias training.
Yeah, I think that's sort of goes hand in hand with what I envision the future of our police department to look like. I think they already do a good job of this, but it's having the highest of standards for hiring a police officer. I believe that our police officers, and a lot of them already are, need to be highly educated. They need to go through rigorous trainings when it comes to not only addressing crime in Lafayette, but also how to diffuse situations, especially when working with young people of color. Watching videos, reading articles and stories of victims throughout the country that have been killed by police officers. I think all of those things need to be integrated within our hiring process and our training process for our officers. And I think all that stuff goes a long way to then first understanding the problem and then being able to find a solution. I think that's so cool that you have, you know, still a presence in the school, not in uniform, and that is willing to learn about you all and connect with you all. I feel like if that was the case with the SROs across the country, you know, a lot of them wouldn't be being pulled out of schools.
Since the police are no longer wearing uniforms in certain schools, making their presence less intimidating, is there a way to make this applicable to the community and other public spaces? How can they be involved in the community events as a member rather than as a police officer or an enforcer?
That's a really good question. I do admire a lot of the work that the police department does on a volunteer basis outside of work time when it comes to supporting events in our community, especially, you know, the Martin Luther King Day celebration that the Youth Advisory Commission hosts every year. A lot of our police officers do take time outside of their duty hours to support our community already. You know, I would just like to see as much of it as possible.
What's happening is that the relationship between the community and the police overall,
I think that's so cool that you have, you know, still a presence in the school,
to a lack of
unarmed,
trust
not in uniform,
and, the police,
and that is willing to
ideally
learn
what
about
I think
you
it
all
should
and
look
connect
like
with
is
you all.
The
I feel
community
like if that was the case with the SROs across the country, you know, a lot
in
of them would be
space
being pulled
to better
out of
understand
school.
Each other and learn more about each other and create that relationship, because the relationship might be there, but it might not be as strong as we need it to be. We need to eventually start moving towards something better through that relationship, humanizing the police and just creating a better understanding so that relationship gets stronger, because we're not against each other. We should be working with each other. for the benefit of everybody.
ELIAC has collaborated a lot with Chief Basher and the Lafayette Police Department, making events where the community can go and ask questions about anything they want to ask, or just in general to build that relationship with the Lafayette Police Department. And actually, that was a conversation we had during one of those meetings where the police department expressed how scared and how vulnerable they felt during like the whole Black Lives Matter movement, because they were scared what would happen if something happened here in Lafayette and stuff like that. And we kind of responded and said, that's how the BIPOC youth of color feel here in Lafayette every day, just simply by their skin color. So I think that really created a sense of understanding for each other. And that's actually, I think, how Chief Basher reached out to us and was like, I thought about what you said, and that's awesome that he listened to us and that he wants to support us.
Going past curfew can be a municipal offense and cannot be recommended for restorative justice.
The current curfew for minors is 11 p.m. on weekdays and 12 a.m. on weekends.
Research has shown that this curfew is affecting BIPOC youth and youth from low-income families disproportionately due to discrimination and lack of transportation.
Chief Basher has expressed support for eliminating this curfew.
So our question is, what is your perspective on the current curfew?
If the research shows that this is affecting our BIPOC youth and youth from low-income families, I totally agree with the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission's proposal on eliminating this curfew, and I'm very happy to hear that Chief Basher also agrees with this.
I'm fully in support of Chief Basher and the Youth Advisory Commission. This is one of those examples that I was just talking about, right? Working hand in hand for the betterment of a community. Getting rid of the curfew here in Lafayette, I think, is almost a no-brainer. When young students are punished for simply, you know, being out too late, they're fined and they're ticketed, or and then they're forced to go through our judicial process as opposed to any alternatives. Not only is it important to eliminate these initial barriers, but at the same time, it's reforming the entire system as a whole, right? So what other ordinances or laws are in place that are directly targeting youth, and what are the consequences? Right, so how do we change both of those things to ensure that our young people aren't stuck in a system of, hey, you did this wrong, here's your punishment, and now go to jail for it, right? Or, you know, that sort of culture that's being perpetuated by these types of existing ordinances is something that I think is the reason why there's this animosity in between a lot of young people of color and the police department.
Is there anything else you'd like to cover, any other remarks?
So one thing I think that I really want to close off with, during the civil rights movement, people forget how young a lot of these leaders are, right? Martin Luther King, in his early 20s, he was leading a lot of these marches and delivering those famous speeches. The Greensboro Four, sitting at the Woolworth counter in North Carolina. And you have Claudette Colvin, who was only 15 years old, protesting her right to sit at the front of a bus before Rosa Parks. Unfortunately, in addition to all that, the death of a young Emmett Till, right? So you have all these movements initiated by young people, thought of, created by young people, and then adults coming in to support them. That's how it should be. When you're involved in these powerful groups like the Lafayette Youth Advisory Commission, you have so much influence. And so I think it's important for you to take advantage of that, because you can create some movements in this community. Thank you. That's all I have for you.
Thank you for your time, your insight, and your public service. Denise, I actually remember you when I was in middle school, and I think I was like in seventh grade, and I was in AVID, and you were presenting on how there needs to be more students of color in the IB program, and I think a lot of us looked up to that.
I also remember that presentation, and right now Isaiah and I are in the ethnic studies group, and we always reflect back on what you guys did and what your group did, and we're always like, Anise was awesome, and we always want to continue that, make sure we can create change at our school and just in the community in general.
That's awesome to hear. Even talking to JD earlier, he has led the way for me too, because he was my coach for that team. I think it's really awesome, even now as I'm, you know, city council elect, reflecting back on the people who have guided me through this process and how I get to do that for other people now. That's my ultimate goal, is that we keep raising up leaders so that one day you guys can replace me and replace JD. We'll forever have to, you know, continue this work.
A diversity of youth voices and perspectives is crucial for a rich, informative, and creative media landscape that enables the growth of civic participation and community strengthening. The KGNU Media Gardens Youth Initiative will continue to amplify more young voices and perspectives through these airwaves.